Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, I have started reading The Gunslinger.
Oh, Chris, I'm so excited and so nervous about what you're about to share with us. Yes.
I am about 30-40% of the way through it right now, judging
has, by my... Has anything horrifying happened yet?
Yes, a lot of horrifying things have happened.
Good. Okay, yeah, then you truly are reading The Gunslinger.
Yeah, I really am reading The Gunslinger. It is not the book that I thought it was going to be. You mentioned, there are lots of things in it that I think happened that are very unsavory, I will say that. So this is not a book to, I think, like maybe idly pick up. It's good so far. I mean, it's Stephen King sort of at his best, I think, where you're just like, these characters are so compelling, like, and I sort of need to see what's about to happen, and there's twists and surprises at every turn. It's good so far. I'm really kind of wondering where it's going to go. I went on
the Splatbook podcast to discuss this a while ago. And I remember after we were done recording that episode, we all had a chat of like, we didn't really talk about any of the gross stuff.
Yeah.
And a couple of us were like, that's kind of a bummer because the gross stuff is what kind of provides the friction of this story. Like the stuff that you really have to kind of deal with or confront as a reader.
Yeah.
And so like, I think about this periodically ever since our recording. Like, I feel like we did this series a little bit of an injustice by talking about the regular fantasy story stuff and not talking about the gross stuff, which really is like the parts where Stephen King is swimming in and like, you like fantasy, you like Western fantasy, huh? Well, here's some weird, uncomfortable stuff to like deal with.
Did you think about this? Yes. Yeah. Right. There's so no spoilers, you know, about it if you're gonna read it. I mean, it is, there are parts of it where it's like, he sort of confronts you with the reality of like what this sort of character who's named the Gunslinger, like what sort of following him around would be like, right? It's like, and it's not a very pleasant experience. So I guess my question for you is that like, so would you classify this book as a Western or would you classify it as a fantasy novel?
I would classify it as a fantasy novel with really strong Western trappings.
Okay. Yeah.
That's my bias I'm bringing in from the later books, which do some of those later books are just pure like sci-fi fantasy.
Okay.
And a couple of them are very close to pure Western. Mm-hmm. But overall, I feel the series is best described as like a fantasy with strong Western trappings.
It's interesting because when I picked it up, I 100% thought it was just like a Western, right? Like a kind of a standard Western in the Stephen King style where there's like, you know, something mildly supernatural happening or whatever like that. So it's been a bit of like a jarring surprise in a good way to see that it's like, oh, like, no, there's a lot going on here. That's just more kind of straight fantasy. So
what it strikes me as nowadays in this kind of post-Marvel universe, this is a kind of classic example of what I would call like a multiverse fantasy.
Yeah.
I think it's certainly hinted at in the first novel, but it doesn't really dive into it. But this is a fantasy series that is happy to just pop around the multiverse like it will and pull in things from one universe and from another universe into its story. And I don't remember how much of that really comes out in the first novel, The Gunslinger, but I think you at least are getting some hints that like, this is a story that does not feel especially bound to stay within like one setting.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There's a character that was just introduced that is like, you know, very clearly not of the time frame and the place that the gunslinger is, but it's also very unclear to me right now, like reading it, like, is the gunslinger really part of this time and this place? You know, is the man in black, right? You know, so like I've got a lot of questions that I'm sure we'll get into maybe, you know, privately after done with it. But yeah, it's good, right? I will say one other thing that I wanted to say is, so I picked it up because I had been emailing with someone else about like a job thing a couple months ago, and they had mentioned that they just listened to Roll for Topic because they saw it on like my resume or something like that. They said they enjoyed it, which is always great to hear. And then
that's more research than I've ever done upon seeing someone's resume. Yeah. FYI. Yes. So no. Absolute kudos to this person.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Amazing guy. Like I loved like chatting with him just for, you know, for the brief time that I did. One of those people you're like, you're very happy to have run across. Right? Yeah. You had mentioned that Gunslinger Splatbook episode, and he like just unprompted was like, Chris, like you have to read The Gunslinger. I was like, oh, okay. Like, yeah. It's like you need
it's
to try
it. It's a condition of this job that you
have. Yeah, it's a condition. So I put it in my queue, right? So I finished up, you know, a couple of these other books, and like it finally came up. The timing was perfect. Like the library copy came off on the hold, like right as I was finishing up my last book. So it's like, okay, well, I'm going to dive into this and see. It's also interesting. I'll just note, and we can move on after this. Stephen King has, I think, like two introductions in the version of the book that I'm reading. Right, because yep. I think it's like, you know, 10th anniversary or 20th anniversary or something like that. But he mentions that when he was doing author events, like he would ask people if they'd ever read like The Gunslinger, and like it was like a 50-50 split, right? So like people were sort of like in the dark tower, like this is why I'm here, like, and I love this stuff, or like they'd never heard of it, didn't care about it at all. But it seems like Stephen King, like this is sort of his pet project, like this is the one that he really loves writing.
Is Stephen King's like magnum opus, and mm-hmm. I mean, I don't really want to spoil anything, but I will say it becomes clear by the end of the Dark Tower series that this is that Stephen King considers completing the Dark Tower series his life's work, like, and that is evident in the text of the Dark Tower series itself.
It's cool. Yeah. I mean, it's also like just to relate it back to gaming too. I mean, I can see why this is an alluring setting for people who want to run games, right? Because I think I've heard that expressed by a couple people of like, oh, like, wouldn't it be cool to run like a really good Dark Tower-esque. And I know that I'm probably more than one, you know, product that is directly like sort of, referencing that. But yeah, like it is, again, Stephen King is so good at this, of just writing these places where you just sort of instantly feel like you can inhabit them in a way. And like, right, you or I can't do that, right? But I think it's a good goal to sort of set for yourself of like, how do you make this place such that on a, you know, one page description of it, sort of everybody knows exactly what this place is, knows sort of what the, you know, like what the potential avenues are for conflict, you know, for problems they need to solve and things like that. And like, how do you can like reveal more and more information as you're going on. And it's like the first sort of town that the gunslinger shows up in, it's just like, I mean, like, I just feel like I know that place, right? Despite like, I don't live in a Western, Western novel or anything like that. But like, there's just so much richness there. And like, he does it in such an economy of language. It's like, you know, like, despite the fact that, you know, he writes these huge, massive books, you still feel like you're reading this and like, oh, like this was like almost breezy, right? Like that my understanding of this place.
Well, the question of the Dark Tower setting as a gaming setting is an interesting one, because like you say, there's this whole Weird West genre that exists in role playing that is obviously draws some inspiration from the Dark Tower series, but I think it's interesting that we've never seen an official licensed version of this setting in a gaming context, video games or tabletop games or anything at all. To me, the first Dark Tower novel feels like running a modern kind of indie narrative type game where you are throwing out to the players like, okay, tell me who's playing the piano in this saloon. Describe the saloon to me. Describe this little town to me. Give me an NPC, a weird NPC that shows up that somehow fits into this town.
Yeah.
It's like a story that understands really profoundly the archetypes it's drawing from. And that feels like a really inviting game series to me. But at the same time, like if you were to say, should there be like a Dark Tower game RPG game setting, that's like a harder thing to answer.
I know we've talked about this in the past, like there are definitely novels, right, and stories and stuff that like they don't need to exist in like at your gaming table, right? Like but there's is still something like alluring about like the thought of it too. Like I don't know, like I mean, again, I'm only, you know, handful of pages in. into the first book, but like the thought of like a party of a bunch of gunslingers running around, it's like, well, that's like the reason this works in the story is because there's sort of like, there's like the one guy that you're following, right? Like you're not following like a party. They're not like, you know, making tactical, you know, like in the book, he's making tactical decisions, but it's very much just like, he's just reacting to the situation, right? He has this one goal. He's just constantly reacting to the situation in front of him versus like, you know, he's not sitting down and being like, okay, well, if I do, you know, if I map out this strategy exactly, like this is how it's going to play out. He's, yeah.
Yeah. So book four of the Dark Tower series is a flashback novel that tells the gunslinger's like backstory kind of. So it does that thing that good quote franchises, I hate that word, do, which yes. is that, you know, like the first Star Wars movie, they like throw out a lot of stuff that kind of inspires your imagination without drawing boundaries or limits around it, you know? Mm-hmm. So like Star Wars is tossing out words like the Clone Wars. What is that? Who knows?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like you're just free to imagine what that is. And I think the Dark Tower series as a whole, it does successfully present you with a setting that feels bigger than the one person and his pals. Like as he goes through the series, he collects some pals and you get sort of a PC party within a couple of books. But it feels like the sort of setting where a million awesome tales have taken place. And maybe your PCs might have been one of these awesome tales that are now a legend in the setting, right? There's a trick to doing a setting like that, right, where it makes it feel really expansive. It just lets your imagination kind of go wild with like, wow, what, how many, I'm reading this one story which I'm enjoying, but how many other cool stories am like are happening just outside my field of vision? And to me, that is the sort of setting that does make for like a great RPG setting. I think it's why like Star Wars works as an RPG setting, right? Because right from the beginning, this is a setting that is bigger than the individuals we're following in the movie, even though these individuals, are they important? Of course, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, it's like the, I feel like there's this trope in gaming, right? Like if you think about like the, you know, D&D level 1 through 20 campaign, right? Like you hit like level 20 and at that point like everything is about you, right? In that universe, right? Like there is nothing that you are not involved in, right? Like at this point you are challenging the gods themselves, right?
Yeah.
And it's like there's something that is very fun and interesting about that, like, you know, you're this multiverse traveling, you know, like killing machine, right? Like at that point when your party's up there. But like for me, like I think it sounds like for you too, like it's the tantalizing like thought of like, oh, there's like all these adventuring parties in this world, like there's all this stuff happening. It's not like this static thing that's sort of waiting for you as the heroes to interact with it, right? It's like everybody sort of has their own thing going on. Right. And like, yeah, and exactly like that's the compelling part of Star Wars is, right, there's all these planets and there's like people doing their own things and like there's people that, you know, rule it. Right. And it's like, and you don't really know about that until you're dropped into it. And it's like, oh, like, what is this place? Like, what's the story? And like, the more that you learn about it, the less interesting it sort of gets because it becomes knowable. And then it's also like everybody knows you, right? Like knows the characters that you're playing. And it's like, well, now it's just my problems. It's not like your problems that I'm trying to help you solve. It's like, oh, it's just the problems of the party at that point. And I think that's often where like I've seen stories in tabletop games sort of a little bit going off the rails. It's like when the party gets to the point where like they're the drivers of the narrative and they're not just like reacting to it, or they are part of it, right? When they're the ones that it's like, it's all about us, right? It's like, okay, yeah. Well, maybe it's time to retire.
Well, I first read The Gunslinger back in probably the early 90s, and there is one thing from The Gunslinger that has stuck in my mind ever since I read it. It's none of the plot points. It's none of the adventures that The Gunslinger has. It's the fact that when he appears in town, the guy playing the piano in the saloon is playing Hey Jude. And to me, when I first read that as a kid, that blew my mind. Like I didn't know what I was dealing with. Yes. And even today I can appreciate the power of that just little wrench thrown into what otherwise is, I think you have a handle on the setting, right? and he strolls into town, and it's this incredibly stereotypical Wild West setting. And then the GM throws in, like, oh yeah, the guy at the piano is playing Hey Jude. Like, what? Yes. I mean, it's just what you need, I think, to like make the setting go from like, okay, whatever, I've seen this in a million places, to like, what is this place? I'm so curious about this place now.
Yes. Yeah. And it is even presented as like the gunslinger understands that it's Hey Jude, and everybody in the town is singing along with it too. And it's like, okay, yeah, this is different. It's, the show Bridgerton, which I know is like 100% not for Andy, but like Bridgerton does this as well, where like they're, you know, so it's like, you know, Regency era, right? Like romance and stuff, but they're, all the musical cues are like modern songs that they've just, they've written just like string quartet.
Chris, you're quartet blowing versions. My mind right now.
Okay.
Like, do I, is Bridgerton going to be my favorite show all of a sudden? Like, 'cause that's incredible. Okay. Tell me more.
Yeah, we've made the jump from The Gunslinger to Bridgerton, so I don't know if I should get some sort of award for genre fiction or never be allowed to read another book again. So it is like a delightful trick, because like you hear this song that you're like, oh, I know that song. Like, why do I know that song? Like, this is, you know, like in this context, right? And it really like, it kind of like, it places you in the mindset of, right? And it's a little bit of a cheesy trick, but it's also a really good one too, of like, oh, like these people are just like us, right? Like, you know, right? Like, it seems like this olden times thing, but like, you know, they're exactly like us, right? And it helps you like kind of ground yourself in the story too, I think, because like, you know, you're listening to the music that you listen to, so it's like, okay, so I can identify with them, and it's okay for me to identify.
Okay, so just to be clear, this is like a historical show, but when you hear music, it's like, a Coldplay song or something like that?
Yeah, like but like on a string quartet version of it. Okay. I'm going to hastily say, like, I would be wary of ever using the term historical along with Bridgerton, because I'm sure there are many inaccuracies, but it's like a cosplay version of history. Again, like, it's an adult show, right? So children who are listening don't watch it. But my wife loves it. Like, I've watched all the seasons. When the fourth one comes out, I will watch it. I know Ben of Splatbook loves it too. This is just like one element of it that is like always stuck out with me. So like, we have a couple of the soundtracks, or one of the season soundtracks. It's like, it's just fun to listen to. It's like these modern songs rendered in like a Regency era string quartet.
Okay, I've never been more intrigued. I've never had faster whiplash from like, I will never watch this show, to I need to instantly pull this up on a streaming service and watch it.
This is great. This is going to make Ben in particular extremely pleased.
Okay. It's okay, though, that the only thing I like from the series is going to be that it plays like whatever Katy Perry songs, like
in
string quartet style, right? Okay.
Yeah, that's totally fine. Yeah, everybody's got their reasons. Okay. Anyway, let's set that aside. So thank you for indulging me. Yeah, we'll continue to give you updates. Hopefully by the time we record next, I've finished The Gunslinger, I can join you in the love for the Dark Tower.
But, yeah, for sure.
So the other thing I want to talk about, I think this might be the thing we talk about this week, is so my daughter played in her very first D&D game. This was about a week ago, week and a half ago at this point. So I went over to one of her friends' house. So she's 9, and her friends that she played with, I think, are like 7 to 9 or so, in that age range. It was as chaotic as everybody says that it is playing D&D with kids, and it was super fun. They all want to play again. It went really well. So I got there, and so they had the starter set. So it was not Dragon of Icefire Peak. It was the other one.
Probably Stormwreck Isle or something like that.
Yeah, Stormwreck Isle. So the Stormwreck Isle one. And so like a couple of the people had already played a few sessions, or like one session. So they were on like chapter 3 in the book, right? So like I got there, and I was like, immediately I was just sort of like looking around at the table. And like, okay, like I understand, like, you know, the kid who's like trying to like read the book, I'm like, okay, do you want to be the DM? Right? Do you want to like take on this?
Yeah, you got to identify that kid right out front.
Yeah, I picked him out. I was like, I'm sorry, I'm setting you on a path right now, but I was just like, do you want a DM? And he just like looked at me like, this is like the greatest thing. Like, he's been thinking about this, like, you know, thinking about this his whole life. And so yeah, he took the book, and like I just sat next to him, and along with a couple other adults, we just sort of like helped manage some of the energy levels at the table, I'll say. yeah, I managed some of the energy levels, making sure that people were, you know, being heard, and sort of just guided it a little bit. So this was my plan all along, was like, as soon as possible, we want to get them just sort of playing together, right? Like, I don't want this to be, D&D is a thing that an adult has to run, like a run for you, right? Like, this is something that you guys can do. You guys can do together whenever you want. Yeah, so I sat there and just sort of like guided it, like, you know, gave this, you know, this blossoming new, you know, DM, like some hints here and there. Like, I mean, I think the first one was like, you know, he's just on chapter 3, there's a shipwreck with a harpy, right, that, you know, they can go investigate. And he was just like, okay, cool. Like, so you're at the shipwreck. I'm like, wait a second. Like, where were they before? Like, why are they going to go to the shipwreck, right? Like, build the story a little bit, you know, some basic stuff like that. Which turns out, like, they didn't need that, right? Like, they would have been perfectly happy to be like, okay, we're at a shipwreck, and like, you know, we're gonna explore it, right? Yeah, so it was fascinating to like watch. I mean, I love watching and playing with people who have never played a tabletop game before, because it's just, you know, it's super fun. But like, you know, especially with kids too, it's like the character sheet is bewildering. They don't care. They've like, you know, they've named their character. They know like the two things they can do. You know, it's gonna be super fun. And then they're just sort of like throwing out ideas, and like, you or I would be 1,000,000% unsurprised that a harpy swoops in. You know, like, you get up on the ship, it's like very clear, like, you know, there's bones everywhere, right? Like, there's bones, there's gore everywhere. You know, you search around, you find this nest and everything. So you'd be like, okay, cool, like, we're about to get attacked. You know, but, you know, these kids, like, the harpy, you know, harpy swoops in, and they're just like, oh my goodness, like, what's happening, right? You know, they just kind of erupt in. And it just was like such a fun thing. A fun thing to be involved in and to watch, because I think like there is an emphasis when you're an adult, or at least like you're running around our circles, about like telling these rich, compelling narratives, and like, you know, having these really nice mechanics that fit well with the narrative and stuff. And like, when you're a kid, you just don't care. Like, you don't care as much, because you're just excited about the thing itself. Right. And like, so for me, I mean, it's like, oh, like this is like who the starter set is made for. Like, right. Like, this is like beginning D&D. This is beginning the tabletop hobby. It's like, oh, this is such a pure form and example of it. Right. Cause like, they're not making a decision of like, oh, like, I don't want to use the encumbrance rules, cause like, that's too complicated. They just don't use the encumbrance rules, cause they haven't heard about it, you know, heard about it ever. Or like, you know, or spell slots. It's like, it's not a thing. It's just like, well, I've got magic missiles, so I'm just going to keep using that. Right. It's like, yeah, I just like really enjoyed it a lot. And just upon reflection, like, kind of continue to enjoy it a lot. And I mean, they all want to play again. So we're hopeful that we can get another game going on Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that one, I can remove myself even a little bit more.
Well, there's your mark of a successful game, right? That they want to play again, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So I have a couple questions for you. Did they get into their characters at all? Or did they just play themselves like, during a harpy attack on a shipwreck?
Yeah, they did get into their characters a little bit, but it was very much like the heroic version of themselves, right? Because that's sort of all they can handle. But like, I mean, they named their characters. They had pre-gen character sheets. My daughter, I gave her a bunch of options, and she chose the wizard. And I just was like, why did I give you options? Like, you knew you were going to choose the wizard.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you know, so like, she named her character Iris. Like, you know, she thought really hard about it, and she started to like doodle on the character sheet, like, you know, doing all the classic things. Things there. So yeah, they were trying to sort of, yeah, they were playing their characters, but it was very much like, you know, their personality sort of playing.
Now, so much of D&D and other role-playing game design is about like kind of balancing the powers and abilities you have. In D&D, that often feels to me subjectively like they really come down hard on like what first, like low-level characters can actually do. Yeah. I'm just curious, like, do they want to be able to fly around every turn because they have the levitate spell? Or is it valuable to them that you have exactly one spell slot with levitate memorized in it and you can use it once? You know, like, how did they play with, like, did they come into contact with the boundaries of, like, what you might call real D&D? And did those boundaries make the game better, or did they just blow past them and were like, I want to do whatever I can imagine?
Yeah, a little. So at one point, one of the characters wanted to do something that sort of just didn't make sense, right? And I was like, you're too far. Number one, you're too far away. Number two, it's like, what are you actually trying to accomplish there? Yeah, so there was like one element of like I wish I could have just been like, yeah, you try that, right? Or you just do that. But it's just like, it didn't make sense to like, you know, to give the go ahead there. You know, so part of that was me sort of modeling, like, you don't just get to do whatever you want, right? Like, so that's, I think that's also a valuable part about playing these games is learning some things like that. But what I will say is, like, I think they all gravitated towards, this is the thing my character can do. So, like, one of them was, like, I really want to shoot a bow and arrow. So it's like, great, you can just, there's a fighter pre-gen, you're a fighter as a bow and arrow, right? And so, like, she wanted to just, that's what she wanted to do, is shoot her arrow. And, like, you know, probably she should have taken disadvantage or whatever because she was too close to fire an arrow. But it's like, we're not going to get into that. It's just like, okay, that's your attack, right? Because it's really, yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, like, yeah, like my daughter was, you know, using magic missile and one of the other kids had an axe that he was using to try to, you know, swing. And it's like, yeah, so they just really enjoyed doing that. It did have the experience, and like this happens in every D&D game that I've ever played with anyone for the first time. You roll and you don't hit and nothing happens. And like that just, you know, like they weren't like bothered by it too much, I think, because it wasn't happening over and over. But like we've been in that cycle, I think we've all been in that cycle where you're trying to hit something, you just can't roll high enough, and it's just like, okay, cool, well my turn passes again where I don't hit. Yeah, but like there was a little bit of that twinge, I could see it in their eyes of like, oh, but like I wanted to hit it. And like I wish there was a better mechanic for that, like, oh, like you miss but you still do one damage or something like that. I don't know what it is exactly, but
yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I fully understand why these sorts of limits and restrictions on player ability are present in games. But, you know, like, how often does Aragorn swing his sword and he doesn't kill the orc he's fighting, right? Yes. I mean, he always kills the orc. And, like, the excitement of him being the sort of person who has a cool longsword is that he can pull it out and kill the monster at the climactic part of the fight, right?
Yeah,
like, it's not that he has a 60% chance of killing the monster at the climactic part of the fight. Like the whole point of him being who he is that he can whip out his awesome sword and kill the orc chieftain in the climactic moment of the fight.
Yeah.
And my history of playing D&D-ish games is I feel like I'm always bumping up against that. Like, in the fiction and in the literature we follow, like, there are like it, like, whatever, Elric doesn't have a 40% chance to hit with soul, whatever, what is the sword called,
Stormbringer.
He doesn't have a 40% chance to hit. He has a 100% chance to hit with Stormbringer. It hits every time, and then something interesting happens because he hit with Stormbringer, right? Like, he kills the thing, but then it also kills one of his loved ones, you know, or something like that. That's usually what happens. But, you know, like with D&D, like, you're right. Like, that to me is like the dreaded, like, it's right there in the rules. It's incredibly likely you're going to find yourself into one of the cycles of like, everyone rolled this round and nobody hit. So I guess we just start the next round again, roll initiative, right? And, you know, that feels appropriate, like, kind of game wise, but really inappropriate imagination wise, right?
Once
Aragorn pulls out his sword or Elric brandishes Stormbringer, he doesn't have a 40% chance to hit, right?
Yeah. It is. I think if they had gone, you know, like, you know, a full round without anybody hitting, like, I probably would have stepped in to be like, let's adjust the rules a little bit or something like that. Cause like, that is, it's just no fun, right? Like, I mean, I remember this. I was playing a game with Kyle Latino one time. He was GMing, and it was D&D, and like we were trying to just like jump over, you know, like a small pit, basically, and like everybody was just failing, and it just like it turned into this like comically long sequence of like no one can get their rolls, and it's like I don't know what this is representing anymore, right? Like it's like it's like that's the sort of thing, like when I'm thinking about like, oh, I'm gonna introduce my daughter and her friends to this game, it's like the last thing I want is for them to run up against these rules that like don't make sense to them and aren't providing fun to them, right? In the thing that they're super excited about, right? right? So it's like they are excited to play Dungeons and Dragons because this is something they've been hearing about their whole lives. It's in media. Every single cartoon they've ever watched has a D&D episode these days, right? It's just like it is this thing, and it is like this cultural juggernaut, right? So they want to play D&D. And the last thing that you want to happen is like, okay, great. Like the first four times you roll the dice, it's a failure. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, like that's not, oh, yeah, that's not great. So I mean, it was a little bit of a roll of the dice of like, is that going to happen to them? Right. Like, you know, thankfully, I mean, with that encounter in particular, like the odds are in your favor there, but like, there's definitely other encounters and other, you know, that I played where it's like the odds are not in your favor. In fact, you might have a total party kill if you don't play this correctly. And it's like, how do you know how to play correctly if it's the first time you're playing?
So was there a moment in that game that felt like just pure brilliance that you want to, like, is there some moment of excitement in that game that you want to bring into the next game you play with a bunch of jaded 40-something adults?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. I mean, the thing that I should have let the young GM do that I kind of stopped him from doing, which is like you're at a shipwreck, right? Like, and I was like, oh no, we got to back up and give him like a little bit of reason why. It's like, I think the next time I play a game like this, it's just going to be like, you are like, there's a harpy screaming down at you. Like, that's the first thing that I say, right? Like roll initiative, right? Just getting back to that, like, I don't know, like the play part of it. Like, it's fun, right? Like it's like, that's the thing that's fun, right? Like it's, you can give yourself all the motivation you want to like get out, like, yeah, get your characters there and stuff. But like the fun part is just like, you know, harpy attack that you're surprised by. Right. And like, you can start there and right, you can go back and find those motivation stuff later. But like, I mean, that to me was just like, it's like, yeah, it's such a pure expression of what the game is. Like harpy attacks, they didn't even have a second thought of like, we are going to attack it back. It just was, you know, like, are we going to talk to it or attack it? Right. It just was like, everybody draw their weapons. It's time to go. And then like, I was really proud of my daughter, right? You know, she sort of hung back and just fired magic missiles at it, right? It's like, yeah, you know, yes. She did what she was supposed to do, right? Like, yeah, it's like, yeah, that's awesome.
Did anyone try anything incredibly unexpected?
Yeah, did they?
Not... Were they mostly like, this is a harpy, obviously we got to fight it, we're all fighting the harpy? Was someone like, I'm going to like ask the harpy to go to the prom dance, out there?
Nothing like that. I mean, there was some like, you know, potty humor, I'll say that. I'll leave it there, you know, here yes. and there. I mean, I think the surprising thing is, right, so they get on the ship and like, again, you and I as jaded gamers would be like very cautious, right, about this thing. They just, the first thing they did was most of the party went up the mast to the crow's nest.
Yes, right?
Like
of course.
Three of them went up there and left the wizard on the boat. It's like, well, that was a bad idea.
Right. Yeah. The worst possible idea, but the best gaming idea, right?
Best gaming idea, right? Because like then the harpy's attacking as they're like still coming down, you know, down the ladder and stuff, right? So it's just like, yeah, it's great. It's like, yeah, I don't know. It's super fun, right? And like they, again, right, they're asking to play again. So I think that is a huge success. Yeah.
This makes me just think about, you know, what is the average age of a D&D adventurer, right? It's like in my games, there's always a sense it's like ages like 18 to 20, right? It's like really young adult. Yeah. And at that stage, you can be a person who's like, there's a mast. I'm going to climb to the top of this mast. Like it makes right. It's objectively dumb. It's a terrible tactical maneuver, but obviously you're going to climb to the top of it. Right.
Yeah.
Like there's a certain like youthful energy, I think, that is lost when you turn like what, 23 or something.
Yeah. And
there's no longer this suddenly this, none of this makes any sense anymore.
Yeah.
Like I sometimes wonder just in the D&D adventures I read how much of it, like there's a sort of defensive, I don't know, you can acquire a sort of defensive feeling like once you are old enough to be logical about stuff and to lose that sense of like, I'm in a crazy wonderland. I'm just going to do the most, you know, I'm going to engage with whatever the closest, most colorful thing is. I'm just going to do whatever that is, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I think there's a real magic when you let kids play.
Yes, there absolutely is. Yeah, I mean, their prefrontal cortexes are not fully formed, so it's, yeah, biologically it makes sense too. But yeah, so anyway, we need to wrap up. But like, yeah, thanks for letting me kind of give the recap there.
Yeah. So is there a takeaway you're taking as like a grown ass man GM? Mm. Is there a takeaway you're taking from this?
Yeah, I think one takeaway is like, I think they're probably too young to really be playing D&D, but I've lost that battle, right? So I think there's probably better games for them, but this is what they want to play. So that's fine.
Yeah.
You can introduce some other stuff later. Yeah. And then I think like, yeah, my main takeaway is probably just the casualness of it, right? Like we went from like, they were all like playing together down in the basement of the house we were at, like, you know, just kind of having fun playing. And then we're finally like, oh, like we should go play D&D. Like that's what we all got here together to do. So we just went upstairs and started playing. Right. Like, and they just, you know, yeah. And I think there's a little bit more of a formality that I think has to happen a bit when you're an adult. But I'm also wondering, like, again, always perpetually wondering about this, like, how do we get like playing these games down to something that's a little bit more just like, oh, let's just do it. Right. Or like, you know, hey, we're together. Like, let's just play. Yeah.
Did you identify in this flock of kids, anyone who is like, I would like to see the weapon table to like evaluate the relative strengths and weaknesses of every weapon on the table? Like this one has a +2 attack, mm-hmm. but a -1 slowness modifier. Was there anyone like that? Because I'm curious, because I feel like in a batch of 10 kids, like one of them will be like, I need to see the Dungeon Master's Guide, please.
Yeah, I think the kid that is the DM, I think if anyone was going to have that, it'd be him. I don't know. There's one of the girls, maybe, I think if she gets a little bit more into the rules, might too, but I don't know. It's hard to know. I mean, they don't know that they have options right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, of course.
Yeah. Like I almost brought the player's handbook to be like, oh, here's like the full rules. And I very intentionally was like, you know what? They don't even need to know that exists. Yeah.
Yeah.
exists right now.
Yeah. Yep. For sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing that experience, Chris. Yeah. And, you know, if they do kind of return to gaming, it would be really interesting to see. It would be interesting for me to hear if this moves from like a one time, this is a silly game we all play, to, oh, this is like a longer term thing we're all doing together. I would be interested to kind of chart that transition, but maybe it will or won't happen. So we'll see. But please report back.
Yeah, definitely will. Cool. All right, well, that does it for us. So we've been Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network. Our sister show, The Splat Book, had a surprise episode that launched the day that we're recording this, Tuesday, July 1st. They had Haley on to talk about their new Kickstarter, Book of Worms, which is super delightful. I mean, I think like, a handful of us just have already kickstarted it. I know they've blown past all of their goals. This is another Cloud Curio project. So I'm very excited for that one. I managed to get in on the early bird thing on the Kickstarter, so I'm getting some cool physical rewards along with that. So that's super cool. You can go listen to that. I have not listened to that episode. You can find it at thesplatbook.com. Otherwise, they're technically on hiatus for another month or two, but then they will be back to their normally scheduled being mean about D&D podcast. That's not true. They've got
perfect.
They love it. But I think that does it for us. So I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.